Laudator Jesus Christus, Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Monday, March the 10th, European arms imports surge by 155%. Increased violence in South Sudan threatens the country's fragile peace agreement. But first, Pope Francis continues his medical treatment for pneumonia at Rome's Gemelli Hospital and participates in the spiritual exercises of the Curia via video link. In the Vatican, I'm Linda Bordoni. Pope Francis continues to receive medical treatment for pneumonia at Rome's Gemelli Hospital, where the doctors say his clinical situation appears stable within a complex framework. Thus, the prognosis remains guarded. The Holy See Press Office said on Monday morning that the Holy Father has been informed about the floods in Argentina and expresses his closeness to those affected. At least 16 people died in Argentina's port city of Bahia Blanca after a flash flood triggered heavy rains. The press office also said on Monday morning that the Pope on Sunday followed the spiritual exercises of the Roman Curia via video link from the armchair in his hospital room, and he continues to do so. The exercises began on Sunday afternoon in the Paul VI Hall and are being led by the preacher of the papal household, Father Roberto Pasolini. Starting this afternoon, Monday the 10th of March, the spiritual exercises can be followed live on Vatican News at 5 p.m. Rome time. Afterwards, at about 6 p.m., also in the Paul VI Hall, the rosary will be recited for the Pope's health. And as mentioned, the twice daily meditations that make up this year's spiritual exercises for the Curia, led by Father Roberto Pasolini, focus on the theme, the hope of eternal life. Devon Watkins tells us more.
Father Roberto Pasolini began his reflections on the overarching theme, the hope of eternal life, with an eschatological focus on the end of time. On Sunday evening, the preacher of the papal household noted that contemporary indifference surrounds the idea that there is life beyond death. Rather than giving in to this lack of interest in the eternal, he said, the Church must seek to restore the true meaning of hope that this world is not the end of our existence. The Church's reflection on eternity, he said, should not instill fear but nourish hope, since it means that our choices in life have true meaning and eternal consequences. Father Pasolini pointed out that true purification does not consist in becoming perfect, but in fully accepting ourselves in the light of God's love, overcoming the illusion that we must be something else to deserve salvation. Love and how we live it out in life, he said, is the key that unlocks a blessed eternity in God's presence, while death is merely the beginning of our eternal existence. On Monday morning, Father Pasolini delivered the second reflection, which built on the theme by focusing on the end of all judgment. Drawing on Michelangelo's fresco in the Sistine Chapel of the Final Judgment, the preacher of the papal household revealed that God's judgment is simply an unveiling of the reality behind each person's actions in life. Love, he noted again, is the criterion for entry into the kingdom of heaven, both the love we bear and the love that we enable others to embrace. In Jesus' parable of the final judgment, both the righteous and the wicked are surprised by the king's unveiling of their inner realities. Those who did good did not feel they deserved it, and those who were wicked were surprised that they had not achieved the beatific vision. The true surprise of the final judgment, concluded Father Pasolini, will be discovering that God only wanted us to recognize that we are his children, already immersed in his eternity, even in life. I'm Devon Watkins.
Amid heightened security concerns over Russia and uncertainty over the future of U.S. foreign policy, European arms imports have surged by 155% in the past 5 years, according to a report released on Monday by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, or SIPRI. Data collected by the Swedish-based think tank that conducts research on disarmament showed that in this period the United States have strengthened their position as the global dominant arms supplier, while Russia has faced a steep decline since its full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Lisa Zingarini reports.
According to the data released by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, between 2020 and 2024, NATO members in Europe increased their arms imports by 105%. Europe as a whole accounted for 28% of global arms imports, with an increase of 11% compared to the previous 5 years. Ukraine alone accounted for nearly 9% of global arms imports, and just under half of those imports were from the United States. The data show that despite efforts to strengthen European defense industries, Europe remains heavily reliant on American military equipment. The US supplied more than 50% of Europe's arms imports from 2020 to 2024, with Britain, the Netherlands and Norway among the top buyers. While the United States strengthens its position as a dominant arms supplier, Russia has faced a steep decline as a result of international sanctions over the war in Ukraine and increased domestic demand for weapons. France, meanwhile, overtook Russia as the second-largest arms exporter, with its exports surging by 187% within Europe. In other parts of the world, Asia and Oceania arms imports dropped, mainly because of China producing more of its own weapons. North Africa also recorded a significant decline in arms imports, while sub-Saharan Africa saw an increase, particularly Mali and Burkina Faso, amid growing insecurity in the region. The overall volume of arms transfers globally remained at roughly the same level as in 2015-19, as increasing imports in Europe and the Americas were offset by decreases in other regions. I am Lisa Zengarini.
The United States and Ukraine are set to hold talks on Tuesday in a new diplomatic push after the recent argument in the White House between Presidents Trump and Zelensky. The upcoming talks will be hosted by Saudi Arabia, as Joseph Tullock reports.
Saudi Arabia is to host talks on Tuesday between the United States and Ukraine. The diplomatic push follows the argument which erupted during President Volodymyr Zelensky's visit to the White House at the end of last month. Following that clash, the US cut off military support to Ukraine, and according to media reports, the embattled nation is hoping that this week's talks can get that aid flowing again. Ukrainian officials have said that at the talks they will propose a ceasefire in the air and on the sea, but not yet on the land. Their hope is that, in return, the United States will resume providing them with military aid. Ahead of the talks, the US Department of State said that, quote, President Trump is determined to end the war as soon as possible, emphasizing that all sides must take steps to secure a sustainable peace. Speaking to journalists on Sunday, US President Donald Trump said that he was optimistic about the prospects for the upcoming talks. While the US president has recently made several high-profile moves to restore relations with Russia, he also recently threatened new sanctions against the country over its continued attacks on Ukrainian cities. The Vatican has been calling for peace negotiations to put an end to the war in Ukraine since the outbreak of the conflict. Speaking to Vatican Radio late last year on the 1,000-day anniversary of the war in Ukraine, the Holy See Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, said that while negotiating a just peace takes time, quote, a truce shared by all parties involved could happen in just a few hours, if only the will existed. As Pope Francis often says, Paradin continued, we need leaders willing to bet on peace and not on war. We need individuals who realise the enormous responsibility represented by continuing a conflict which will have dire outcomes not only for Ukraine, but for all of Europe and the world. I'm Joseph Tullock.
The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, has expressed deep alarm over the recent surge in violence in Syria's coastal areas. Media reports estimate over 1,000 persons, mainly civilians, have died in the clashes. Thaddeus Jones reports.
The violence in Syria's coastal area has claimed the lives of at least 1,000 persons and reportedly the lives of at least 13 children. The escalation has also led to the displacement of thousands of families and damage to service infrastructures. UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, has echoed the UN Secretary General's call for restraint in order to prevent further loss of life and livelihoods. The UN Children's Fund issued a statement on Sunday urging all parties to immediately cease hostilities and fully comply with their obligations under international humanitarian law and international human rights law. UNICEF says it's imperative that all feasible measures are taken to protect civilians, especially children, and safeguard critical civilian infrastructure such as hospitals, and that the ongoing violence highlights the urgent need for adherence to these laws and for ensuring rapid, safe, and unimpeded access for humanitarian workers to provide life-saving services to those affected by the fighting. In conclusion, the UNICEF statement appeals to all parties to prioritize reconciliation and commit to a peaceful political transition, ensuring that Syria's children can survive, thrive, and reach their full potential. It says the children of Syria have suffered enough and emphasizes that they have a right to live in peace and hope for a better future. I'm Thaddeus Jones.
And Syria's interim president, Ahmed al-Sharaa, said today he will set up an independent committee to investigate the killings and insisted the perpetrators would be held accountable. The violence is the worst in Syria since Sharaa led the lightning rebel offensive that overthrew longtime ruler Assad in December. The fragile seven-year peace in the world's youngest country, South Sudan, is threatened, meanwhile, as a result of the recent increase in violent clashes there. In 2018, the country's President Salva Kiir and Vice President Riek Machar signed a peace agreement to end a five-year civil war that killed hundreds of thousands of people. Yet the relationship between the two men has remained strained. The agreement divvied up power between the two, but the issue remains that important elements of the deal have not been executed, including a new constitution, an election, and the reunification of armed groups into a single army. Now South Sudan's peace is threatened again as tensions and violence are on the rise. Kelsey Gussie tells us more.
On March 9th, the U.S. State Department described ongoing conflict in the country, which includes between political and ethnic groups. The Travel Advisory for South Sudan stated that weapons are readily available to the population. It read, due to the risks in the country on March 8, 2025, the Department of State ordered the departure of non-emergency U.S. government employees. This comes after the U.N. Human Rights Commission issued a warning of an alarming regression, threatening to undo years of work towards peace. President Kiir has called for peace and assured that the country would not fall back into war. But in the escalation of tension, a UN helicopter evacuating wounded South Sudanese soldiers was attacked, killing more than two dozen people last week. The president ordered a series of high-level arrests and firings of political and army figures as tensions between him and Vice President Machar, a key opposition leader, risk escalating to a breaking point. Fighting between the South Sudanese armed forces and a group identified as an armed youth militia by Human Rights Watch erupted in Nasir County on February 14th. The Human Rights Watch organization stated rumors of a forced disarmament planned by government troops as a cause to the skirmishes. But the exact reason of the conflict is still unclear. Human Rights Watch explained the South Sudanese army attacked groups of the armed youth militia, which then led to numerous other deadly altercations. A local radio station reported at least five civilians were killed. I'm Kelsey Gussie.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. You can join us tomorrow at this same time for more. You can also catch our updates on Facebook, X and Instagram. My thanks go to Gustavo Messina in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Linda Bordoni. Bye-bye.